How's it going, Joe?
Good, man. It feels great to finally actually do another podcast. I mean, we've been both been really busy lately.
Been very, very busy, but now we've made the time to actually have a proper podcast.
Well, one thing I'm really happy with is that we've been really consistent. We're still consistent. Mm-hmm. With everything that's going on right now in the world and in our lives, like you're finishing uni up now, doing your last semester, you're doing the rest of your prac. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got a lot of full-time work now, and we're going into summer, so weekends are getting busy, but we're still staying committed to this, and I'm really happy that we are, because last week we got to do probably one of the best podcasts ever. We had our first fighter guest.
Yeah, and that was really, really cool to talk to Antonio. He sounds like a really, like, down-to-earth guy.
Yeah, like, you look at people, and then you look at what they do, and then the way that they talk about their work and how passionate they are, sort of like, you know, really, like, they feed off this really, like, positive energy. Like, when we were talking to that dude, like, the way that he spoke about being a fighter, I've probably, because we know a lot of a few people who are fighters and involved in mixed martial arts, but the way that guy spoke about his work, it was like he was just put on this planet just for that one thing.
Yeah.
I can honestly say, I honestly believe that guy's going to be champion one day.
And he certainly believes it as well. Yeah. I was trying to put out a couple of posts trying to set up the Eddie thing, because just to see if Eddie gets his eyes on it. And even if it causes a little bit of beef, it's good publicity for Antonio and for him to perhaps have that fight in the future and to build that fight up in the future. So that'd be cool if we got to see Antonio Caruso versus Eddie Alvarez. I reckon that'd be really sick.
That would be crazy. That would, like, catapult him to stardom a little bit.
It's also just one of those names that even casuals remember.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the hardcores will always remember Eddie Alvarez, but, I mean, what a fighter to call out in the first place, but it's one of those names in ONE Championship that it will, I mean, to call out a former UFC and Bellator champion, that's the best name to pick.
Yeah.
Okay, so last week we were watching the fights. Mm-hmm. We were talking about a bit of a weird decision with the judges with that Maloney fight.
Yeah.
So talk us through that.
Well, Franco versus Maloney. First of all, Maloney came out absolutely swinging. He was popping a jab at him. He was throwing lots of hooks, lots of rips at him. And then there was a point where the commentators, they noticed that there was an issue with Franco's right eye. Mm-hmm. And then the judge heard, oh, accidental headbutt. And then they kept checking the review, the footage. There was a slight headbutt, but I don't believe it was enough to cause the eye to swell up.
When they slowed it down,
yeah,
it looked like there was nothing.
Yeah.
There was hardly any contact. It was more of the placing the forehead on there in the clinch.
Yeah.
And then back out.
Well, what was going on then is that overall, Maloney was hitting with a barrage of punches. He was really giving it to him. He put a lot of pressure on him on that first round. Hell, even in the second round, he was putting even more pressure on him. And then the doctor called it off because the swelling, the doctor even stopped the second round for a bit to check on the eye. And then he said he was concerned about it. And then at the end of the second round, they called it off. In my opinion, look, maybe the headbutt had some contribution to the eye swelling. Okay, some contribution. Mm. But I don't feel like it was overall the main factor.
Yeah, I think that's the issue with judging, because it's very subjective. But when you do slow down, I mean that's the point of having instant replay to check that, and you to go, actually, I changed my mind. It looked like it, but actually wasn't.
Yeah.
And then overrule that, right?
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem that case in this circumstance. When I saw it, it looked like he was just very effective with his hooks and especially his jabs.
Yes.
And Maloney even said that afterwards. He said, no, the eye was closed after throwing 30 fucking jabs to his eye. The judges had said that as well, you know, not the judges, the commentators as well. They said, look, I don't believe it was a headbutt.
Yeah.
So I don't think I don't even think you can even call it an accidental headbutt.
Yeah.
I think it was just a little bit of there was a bit of contact, but I don't think it was particularly in the eye or anything like that. Even if there was a headbutt, I don't believe it was in the eye, and I don't think it was of importance to then wave off
yes.
the fight and then not even recognize how good that guy looked.
Yeah, well, he was really, really out punching him. He's a very good volume puncher.
Mm.
But here's the other thing. It's so rare for a referee or a judge to say, my bad.
Yeah.
When do you ever see a judge saying, you know what, mate, let's actually review that. I think that wasn't really much of a head, but it's so rare for judges to do that.
Mm.
And, well, not, of course, we've got to sound a little bit biased because Maloney's Australian and it was in America.
Mm.
You know, I guess they just didn't want to see their own American fighter just getting beaten like that bad by an Aussie, especially when it's in the first couple of rounds, especially when it's their second fight.
You hope it's not that obvious that just because he was an Australian that and they were in America fighting an American fighter that they weren't going to do some stuff like that. We know that's significant in Brazil. You know, if you're going to fight in Brazil and you're going to fight a top name, like, you know, let's say Jose Aldo or something like that, you better beat the shit out of him, like, significantly or KO him. It has to be a fucking landslide. Because if you don't, you know, be prepared for a draw or a questionable decision win for the other opponent. So, to be honest, even though we talk about that, I don't know if that was the case. I feel like it was poor judging. I think it was poor judging. And I think when you make a mistake, it's okay to make a mistake, even as a judge. But you need to be able to say, all right, that was my fault. Originally, this is why I thought this. However, on review, I've changed my mind because I have more evidence and more knowledge and information about the situation in hindsight. Da, da, da. We've talked about this before. Why don't judges or refs come to the press conference, the post-fight conference, and actually, if there is something that the reporters want to ask you, you can just turn up. If the reporters request to ask you a question, you sit down at the very end of all the fighters have gone, and then they ask you, hey, what do you think about this performance? Why did you judge it that way?
Mm-hmm.
Only with the controversial kind of stuff. Like, this was a bit controversial. Explain your reasoning.
Yeah.
They could be right.
Yeah.
They could be right and be like, look, this and this saw it. You guys might not have seen this on the screen, but I was right there. I saw this.
Yeah. Well, even if they go to the press conference or get invited to the press conference and they answer the questions, it doesn't have to be like the media has to absolutely barrage them. But they do understand that a referee's and the judge's position in a fight is so critical. Like, you decide whenever who gets it or not. And if the press just hears your output, you can also sort of defend your stance, because there's been times where even, you know, like judges or doctors or referees have made certain decisions and they've had death threats against them. Like, do you remember?
Well, yeah, which isn't right.
Which
is not right.
But it happened. Do you remember when, what's his name? Nate Diaz fought Jorge Masvidal?
That doctor got wrecked for that.
That doctor got wrecked. Like, so there's a valid that took, I mean, I feel like that doctor, you know, he could have gone to the press conference and said, look, here's why. Here's explain.
I actually agree with the doctor. I think I think maybe we were robbed of a fourth and a fifth. However, Nate Diaz takes a lot of punishment.
Yeah.
He has extensive scar tissue in his face.
Yeah.
And with granulation tissue like that, there's more blood vessels that are easily lacerated and opened. And that's just what's going to happen. Half of his eyelid was on his, over his, I mean, fair play. If, you know, if Nate Diaz says, I want to fight on, right, then you would be inclined to be like, oh, fuck it, I really want to see this fight. However, it's the doctor's decision as their, you know, their obligation is to protect the fighter from themselves.
Yes.
I believe he made the right decision. If Diaz comes and fights again, we know he can absorb a lot of punishment, right? But he can't do it the same way he used to.
Yeah,
because his fitness is incredible, right? He can go 5 rounds easily, right? He can go on for a very long time. Marathon runner. For some reason, these runners can go for a long time and they have a really good chin. I think I have no idea. I believe it's the endurance in the legs or something like that. But I think he can't fight the same style. We know he can box. We know he can break people down with his pressure and take a lot of volume shots, but it can't work that same way anymore unless he gets his scar tissue fixed. However, that's not really a case in most medical procedures, right? To fix scar tissue. There's scar tissue, it tends to be like that for a considerable amount of time, right? There's nothing you can do about it. So I don't think Diaz and some of these fighters that have a huge amount of scar tissue, they can't fight the same way. Yeah, I know that was a bit off topic, but...
Well, I mean, it's like each fight that they go through, I believe Kamaru Usman said it best. Each time a fighter gets into the cage, he loses something from himself. He loses a piece of himself each time. And I just feel like, obviously, the more fights that they go through, the more pieces they lose in themselves. That's why some old fighters are very broken and beaten down from all those years of getting pummeled and all the injuries just built together. I feel like maybe that's just a case with Nate Diaz. He's had all those wars, you know. He had all those massive fights, you know. He beat Conor McGregor and then he came back and had another war of him and... He's lost like a fair, he's sacrificed a fair bit of his body. And I just guess now it was just when it was a case of him versus Masvidal, it just sort of showed that he sort of paid quite a steep price for his love of the sport. And
Well, we were talking about the obligation of a doctor and why they shouldn't be given death threats and things like that, because that's not correct, right? No. Even if you're being robbed of a really great fight, if that guy dies or he can't see out of that eye anymore, I don't know if that guy will be that happy about it, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure someone like Michael Bisping would love to lose a fight but have his vision in his eye again.
Yeah.
So there is that issue. My thoughts is that the obligation of a ref and a judge is to make sure that the fight goes accordingly out of respect for both fighters, because... in the UFC and other MMA organizations, you have money for turning up, you have a money for winning, and you have a bonus, right? And that's usually the performance of the night or something like that, right? Not all fighters get it, but you got incentive money to show up, you got fight money to show up, and you got fight money when you win. And then you got performance or whatever of the night, KO of the night or something like that. Usually performance of the night, right? If you rob that guy of the win bonus, you've just cut that guy's pay in half for most people. You know, if they're doing 20 and 20 and things like these and these, especially when they're up and coming fighters and things like that, you rob them of a shit ton of money when they're not making that much money in the first place. You know, and it gets even harsher in title fights when a guy has a title and you need to beat the champion, right? And they don't do enough really to beat the champion but still get awarded the victory. You've now cost that guy his win bonus and his title, right? And then you won't explain why? It doesn't make sense. If you are going to make a controversial decision or something like that and you have reasoning behind it, then there should be no reason why you can't go to a post-fight conference and be like, all right, I'm going to quickly do a quick summary of why I chose it. These are my reasons why, da-da-da, right? You know, and then if later on it doesn't work out, then you can work on getting it overturned and things like that, which is what happens usually with drug suspensions and things like that. But it doesn't really happen when it comes with poor stoppages. It's just written down as a poor stoppage. Mm. It's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Well, do you remember the time, speaking of poor stoppages and controversial stoppages, do you remember the time when Robbie Lawler fought Ben Askren?
Yeah.
And then everyone had a go at Herb Dean because they thought he stopped the fight way too early. Mm. And he was in the ring. He was like, look, I don't understand. I thought your arm was out, you know.
I thought he was out.
Yeah, everyone thought he was out. So Joe Rogan had to literally go on, get him on the podcast just so he could defend himself. Because I felt like right then and there would have been a perfect time for Herb Dean to go to a press conference and say, look, from my perspective, this is what I saw. This is why I did it. Rather than have to go on be invited onto someone's podcast. I feel like it's also not, it's like this. The fans want to see war, yes, but at the same time, you know, there's always those hardcore ones or the crazy ones that are going to go after, what's it called, the ref and the judges. And I feel like, adding on to your point, if they can go to a press conference, it will sort of allow them to be on damage control and to some extent.
Maybe not even damage control. It's just like, don't make it out on hearsay or what we might assume what you think.
Yeah.
Or, you know, maybe later on you like watch a couple of videos to think, why did that ref choose that? How about the ref just explains how they did it, or the judge explains why. I mean, you got three judges. It's not that hard. Just have them all in one line. They've all got a microphone. They ask a few questions for controversial decisions. Don't waste the time with stuff which is pretty easy. I mean, let's talk about, there was the fighter, the amazing fight was Paul Felder versus RDA.
That's what I was going to bring up next.
Right. Excellent fight. I would say Felder did very well for the amount of time he was out of the gym. He said he hadn't stepped in a MMA gym for 4 months. He'd been training for a triathlon, so he obviously had been working on his cardio, which is why he felt he could do five rounds. He said he started to level down in the in the fifth round, but he said he felt very good up to that point. I thought he did very well against someone that's in, like RDA, who was a lightweight champion at one point and was at one point number one contender in welterweight. So I felt he did very well. What I found weird was two judges scored it, I think it was 50-45?
Yes.
One scored it 48-47 to Felder.
Yeah.
Not to RDA. Not a little bit. Oh, RDA did just enough. It was Felder did enough. I felt that was weird. That was very strange to me. I think a lot of people actually were kind of upset. Even Errol Hawani actually put something out and said, the judge that did the 48-47 should never judge a MMA fight again. I think that's hard. That's a harsh thing to say. However, watching that fight, and yes, it was competitive, RDA did dominate him. I didn't understand the 48-47. But it is weird that everyone can be very upset vocally about the judge's decision, but the judge doesn't get his own way of reasoning, his own way of sitting down the mic and be like, hey, I thought he was doing this, maybe I didn't think the takedowns were as significant as you guys all thought. I thought Felder showed very, very good takedown defense. Maybe he created more damage than RDA's amount of volume, things like that. But I didn't agree with 48-47, but I think at least the judge should be able to explain why.
Yeah.
You know,
well, there's also the photo that's going around on social media of Paul Felder literally looking at the judge when he finds out that he actually has won on one of them. So,
the fighters know. Yeah. The fighters know.
Fighters know. And that, can we just talk about for a second how much of a well respected guy Paul Felder is taking that fight on 6 days' notice? He went to five rounds and he hadn't stepped inside of a gym, MMA gym, in 4 months. That's incredibly brave. So he hadn't done any kind of specific training for him in 4 months. He's a commentator, you know, he's a fighter himself, and, you know, he's a broadcaster as well for the UFC. He's done so much work and he just stepped in there. He just put his hand up like, yep, mate, you didn't need to. He just went, yep, I'll do it.
Mm.
And here's the other thing, there's some sort of respect that everyone's got to give to fighters who take fights on such short notice.
That's very true, yeah.
Because so much goes on into leading up to a fight. And there's a saying, no, perfect preparation prevents piss poor performance.
Mm.
So when there's a fight coming up, they usually want a bare minimum you really want to train is 6 weeks, bare minimum. Like some fighters, they just fight once a year, like Khabib, and they get the whole time to prepare, and their fights get announced at the start of the year. But when you put it all on the line just for such short notice, it sort of shows how much skill some of them have that they don't need, that they're just so so committed and so talented that they don't feel like they need all that just to go in to prove that they're a good fighter. You know what I mean?
Think Felder felt that he fell out of love with the sport. And I can understand why. I mean, I really like Dan Hooker. However, his previous fight with Dan Hooker, I thought Paul Felder won.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my reasoning behind it. Yes, at the very end, one of his eyes looked like it was swelling up. However, a lot of these fighters, that happens because they've got a lot of scar tissue, before we talked about that. I felt he beat Dan Hooker.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Do I think it was a close fight? Fuck yeah. Do I think Dan Hooker did very well? Yes. Mm-hmm. But I believe Paul Felder won. And after he lost by decision, you know, he said, I think that's enough for me. I'm going to retire. And it looked like him training for the triathlon was his way of supplementing that drive for sporting and that competitive environment. So when he was trying to do that triathlon, I think he was trying to kind of not even step in an MMA gym. Just don't even try and get rid of that. And it seems like after his fight with RDA, he's gone, nah, this is the place for me. Mm-hmm. He says, I'm not going to go anywhere. Actually, my ranking might have hit gone down a little bit, but I'm not going anywhere. So I'm happy that this short notice fight happened for Felder. Even though he lost, he's got that fire back in him. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to see him again, because I'm not going to lie, he's, for someone that wasn't training in an MMA gym, I thought he was very impressive physically. And also the damage he could create as well, especially his takedown defense. Takedown defense against Adi. Adi is a beast. Mm-hmm. As a grappler, you know, he did very, very well. Very, very well.
Well, RDF, he's a very overlooked fighter.
He's just been around for a long, long time.
Yeah. Well, if you look at him, I mean, he's got 5 wins by knockout, 10 wins by submission, 14 wins by decision, right? He hasn't lost... his last fight, he lost to Michael Chaser, which was in the beginning of this year. And the fight before that, he lost to Leon Edwards. But, you know, he's been very active across the welterweight and the lightweight division.
How long ago was the Michael Chiesa fight?
Michael Chiesa was January 25th.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and then before that, he fought in July to Leon Edwards, and which he lost. And it was again by decision. He doesn't really get in... the thing is, he's one of those fighters that doesn't really get, like, knocked out or submitted.
Mm.
He's very durable. And he makes it all the way down to the end of the rounds.
Yeah.
Most of his losses come from decision.
Yeah.
So that's another thing, obviously, to take about him. But the main thing I wanted to talk about for a little bit was, like, can you recall any type of, like, fights that stand out for you when, like, a fighter took one on short notice? Like, for me, one of my favorite ones to talk about was Michael Bisping versus Luke Rockhart.
Yeah, yeah.
How he took that fight on literally, I think, 2 weeks' notice.
I think it was 2 weeks' notice. Yeah, he was coming off a movie set.
Yeah, he was filming the Triple X movie.
Yeah.
Which is not a good movie, but good for him. You know, he was trying to have a
life. He's done a few TV shows. Recently, he's done Warrior and things like that.
Yeah.
It's been announced he's going to do a new movie called The Journeyman or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's meant to be like, I think it's a professional boxer or something. He's got a stupid record, like something like,
yeah,
like his losses are like 3 times as many as his wins. But interesting that Bisping would take that, because he's done very well in the UFC. But perhaps maybe he wants to, maybe that storyline connects with him a bit, because some people have called him a journeyman because he's, you know, he would get up to a title shot just before a title shot and lose, and then he would climb back up.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he finally did get, like you said, against, and he went, fuck yeah, this is the title shot I wanted. It was against Luke Rockhold, who probably didn't like very much anyway. Yeah.
Well, he'd already lost to Luke Rockhold.
He got choked out in the second round.
So we can all remember when he beat Luke Rockhold and he jumped up on top of the cage.
He went, fuck you.
And then he talks about it on Joe Rogan's podcast. We did one lap around the cage, shook Luke Rockhold's hand, and then he did, oh shit, done another lap around the cage, and he tries to shake his hand, and then Luke's like, I already shook your hand, mate. And he's like, it's all good, man, we're on TV. It'll come over. I mean,
he said, you got knocked the fuck out, buddy. Don't worry, you'll come too.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
It's funny. Well, is there any other times you can think about?
I mean, The Nate Diaz one comes to mind.
Yeah.
Because he was, Conor was supposed to fight RDA. Then that fell through. I believe RDA got an injury or something like that. And then Conor had the fight with Diaz, and Diaz took that on short wait, quite a short, I think it was the same, like maybe 2 weeks notice or something like that. I'd have to check that actually. It was quite short. I know it was a short notice thing. And that was an impressive win as well. I mean, we can talk about how the other fighter was, well, Conor had staff and things like that, and had an injury in his foot as well. However, every fighter always comes to a fight injured at some point. I thought Diaz looked impressive in that. I thought he did very well. I think a lot of these guys that do triathlons and things like that, they've always got impressive chins, and they always have a huge gas tank. They do very, very well, like Colby. Colby does very well. He does a lot of really long distance running. Those guys have incredible gas tanks, yeah. Someone I did want to talk about, though, was Chaos Williams. He had an impressive – he was in the co-main, and he had an impressive win. He fought – now, I don't want to mess up this dude's name.
Abdul.
Yeah, Abdul. Razak Al-Hassan. Very impressive fight, as long as it lasted. 30 seconds. God damn. Chaos Williams is... Fuck. He was a very impressive KO, because it was just that one straight right. Bang.
Yeah.
Took him down. And I...
One hitter quitter.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. 30 second knockout. Fuck. It was unreal, because... I saw all the memes afterwards as well, but I thought that was a really impressive win as well. I don't know what's next for Chaos Williams, actually. It's very, the UFC is very interesting at the moment with all their top contenders coming out of, you know, the contender series. Yeah. You know, they're talking about the Ultimate Fighter coming back. It's an interesting time, you know?
There's something I wanted to mention recently about, because you brought up the Ultimate Fighter. Dana posted about this, but... He actually wanted Khabib and Conor to do a season of The Ultimate Fighter.
Did.
That would have been the most chaotic season of The Ultimate Fighter ever.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like they would have to spend a good couple hundred grand on security. And security would have to be there every single time Conor and Khabib were in the same room. And it'd just be a whole line of security between the two. And those security have to be like 7 foot ex-Navy SEALs.
Yeah.
Just to keep those two apart from killing each other, or at least throwing dollies over each other.
Something I did want to mention is this Chaos Williams. I'd heard that he had quite a lot of round one KOs. Now he has six round one KOs. His two fights in the UFC. He fought Alex Morano. 27 seconds knockout. And then 30 seconds against Abdul. Very, very impressive. He's now on an 8-fight win streak. Mm-hmm. Very interesting to watch him come up. I believe he's still unranked at the moment in the welterweight division. But he's someone to also keep an eye on. It's always cool to see. We love a good scrap, like three rounds wars and 5-round wars. But these... guys that have incredible power like Chaos, they are impressive people to watch. For some reason, why do you reckon we love round one KOs? Especially when they're short. I mean, that didn't last. His whole time in the UFC doesn't even reach a minute. 57 seconds is his entire cage time in the UFC.
I don't know. That's actually a really good question. Well, it's just because, like, they you don't see him coming. I think that's the reason why. You don't expect him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't really expect anyone to pull off a first round KO. I mean, they're cool. They're really impressive. I think the feat of just getting them there straight away and getting in that one shot, that one perfectly timed shot. I'm not saying a lucky shot, that one perfectly timed shot, which you spend months and months and months training for, sparring hundreds of hours, stretching, getting your body beaten down, all come down to just that one. I feel like it's just... the respect that comes from, I feel like the achievement itself of just getting that first round KO is just, I don't know, something that everyone looks at.
Maybe it's just because you're able to not dominate across the entire fight, but you're able to get in and out without any damage. And yeah. Like some notable ones is there was, I can't remember. Was it BJ Penn versus, what was it? Matt Hughes? That was very quick. That was it, the first round. Obviously got Connor against yeah. Jose, very quick.
The flying knee
from Masvidal.
You know, we got even when Joaquin Buckley's first round, was that first round?
That was a second round, I believe.
But remember when we went to watch Khabib versus Gaethje?
Mm.
And there were a few first round knockouts in that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's I don't know why we like round one knockouts that as much over, you know, a second or a third or a war. We love a war, and it's good to see a good scrap go back and forth, and it really does engage you. But there's something very impressive about getting in and out very quickly with minimal damage and things like that. Let's say, actually, one of the biggest ones, Khamzat Chimaev.
Yes.
Versus, is it Gerard Meerschaert?
Yeah.
That was one punch.
Yeah.
One knockout.
Yeah.
Connor's one punch, one knockout.
Yeah.
What
was another one? Oh, Philip Hawes. That wasn't a one punch, but I remember at the start of the fight, you said to me, Joe, watch out for this guy.
Philip Hawes, yeah. Phil Hawes, yeah.
Don't sleep on him.
Yeah, the Megatron, I said, everyone's looking at the other guy to win.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was, I didn't really want to pick against a fellow like Australian, but I said, just watch this guy, Hawes.
Yeah.
Go for this guy because watch this guy's power.
Yeah.
And he, boom. There's something crazy about not just a one-punch knockout. Like just, you only threw one punch and it had 100% success rate.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about just finishing the first round, getting in and out. Yeah. You don't get a break. You don't get anything. You're in and out quick. And which is probably why Khamzat has been able to, you know, competitively go boom, 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 yeah. boom with his fights, you know?
I think, it's a calculate. It's just taking that risk. The risk of wanting to put yourself on the line just so you can put him away quickly.
Mm.
Because you got to do that. Because when you go into a fight, you want to be calculated. You know, you never know when that one punch you land will be the one to put him away. But you also want to figure him out. You know what I mean? Mm. You know what I mean? And you need to do that. It takes time. And, you know, you can have a round and then your coach can just say to you, oh, he's dropping his hand every time he throws a kick. So, Fang, give him a left hook or something like that. And then they can rely on...
Which is what worked with Bisping, yeah.
Exactly. They can rely on their coaches to give him some good input because the coach, obviously, he reads the fight really well. And then it's up to the fighter how he responds to the advice.
One that was crazy was Rozenstruik versus Ngannou. Ngannou at the bell just came fucking throwing these bombs at Rozenstruik and sent Rozenstruik, you know, down to the canvas. So I don't know why I need to think about this. I believe it's just getting in and out very quickly and showing that you're at a higher level than them at that point in time. I think that's why first round KOs are always the most impressive. I mean, Davison Figueiredo has two wins, both in round one, I believe.
Yeah, and it's such a risk, but it also makes the person who gets knocked out look bad as well.
Mm.
That's another thing. Like, since we brought up Chimaev, I got to bring this up now. Leon Edwards versus Chimaev.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that? Do you reckon? Because Leon Edwards has been quite inactive lately. The reason why the welterweight division sort of just like pushed him to the side is because he's not an exciting fighter. He's a very calculated fighter. He doesn't win.
I think he's exciting.
Well, a lot of people have called him out as just being a very calculated, doesn't want to take the risk.
I think he's an exciting fighter. I think that he doesn't often... I think he carries himself more like a martial artist than a... big pompous fighter that is trying to call out people and talk shit and things like that. Whereas I don't believe he really talks shit. He's more carries himself as a martial artist. He's quite a soft spoken, he's from the UK. He's a soft spoken Englishman. So I don't think it's his fighting style that is not as attractive to other people. I think it's that he doesn't call people that and things like that.
Yeah.
But you don't have to do that to be exciting. I think he was in his right to stay off onto the side. I think he's got, what is it, a 7 or 8 fight win streak. You know, he was set to fight Tyron Woodley earlier this year. COVID hit, yeah. Closed everything down. Yeah. He couldn't go, so that got scrapped. Tyron Woodley fights, I think it was Colby Covington. So Leon Edwards was calling out Jorge Masvidal. He's calling out anyone in the top five because that's as much as... Really, he deserves... Leon Edwards deserves a title shot. Either him or Gilbert Burns, I believe. I think Gilbert Burns versus Leon Edwards would be a really good fight, yeah, to who will fight Kamaru since Kamaru is out of commission. However, Hamzat's getting pushed quite a lot. He's got a lot of hype. And we did speak when we were on the Speakeasy podcast. I said, look, I think Leon Edwards, everyone's tied up. You know, at the time, Jorge was going to fight Nate Diaz. That hasn't got worked out. But at the time, everyone in the top five was caught up in other fights. You know, Leon Edwards is on the side. I said, keep him active. I reckon he should fight Hamzat.
Yep.
The reason why I said that was, steal the guy's hype.
Yeah.
Steal the guy's hype, if you can. He's obviously a very impressive fighter. He hasn't fought anyone in the top 15. So a lot of people in their eyes, he's unproven. However, he's got a huge amount of hype. He's got an impressive record, undefeated, very fast, KO wins and knockout power. Steal his hype. Go fight him, you know, and take his name, take his hype, which is what a lot of fighters do, which it worked for Marlon Chito Vera against Sean O'Malley. Mm-hmm. Everyone knew Chito Vera, but he then stole Sean O'Malley's undefeated record, and that's what helps them build up that fighter's name and makes them even more notable. And that gives you the ammunition to be like, hey, look, I bring people in because of be this person, this person. People know me. I want the title fight. I think that's what you would have to do. And it worked. You know, do I think the UFC were a bit shady in how they made it happen? A little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The fool took away his ranking. He's number 3 in the UFC or something like that, and he took away his ranking,
and then
he accepted the fight, and now he's got it back. The UFC were very cheeky. Yeah. They knew exactly what they're fucking doing, but
they were just trying to push him.
Yeah, I'm just happy the fight's been made and Leon Edwards is staying active because it's been about over a year that he's fought.
Yes.
Him against Hamzat will be an incredible fight as well.
His last fight was in July last year against Los Aldos.
Yes.
And he's got 18. He's got 18 wins, 3 losses. Of those 18 wins, 8 are by decision, 6 are by knockout, and 6 are by knockout.
Yeah.
So that means 4 by submission.
I'd love to see a rematch with Leon and Kamaru because one of Leon's losses is to Kamaru Usman.
That's correct. Yes.
I'd love to see that.
That was also by decision as well.
Yes. Yes. I think Leon is a very good fighter. He's well rounded as well. That's an impressive fight to see. Now, I know I brought up Figueroa before. We haven't watched the... I love watching the countdowns, which is really good to see because you get a little insight into the fighter's world and that. That's a really good fight to look forward to. Figueroa versus Perez.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting fight because Figueroa has looked very, very impressive. Beating Benavidez twice.
Yes.
Very convincingly. You know, I think this is going to be a competitive fight. You know, Perez coming off the Dana White Contender Series. If he wins against Figueroa, he'll be the first. He'll be the first champion, to come from the Dana White Contender Series. So that's, you know, writing your name down in history in itself. But beating someone like Figueroa is no easy task because Figueroa, he looks huge for the weight class.
Yeah.
Apparently, he hits like a featherweight. You know. He looked very, very impressive against Benavidez. I think in their last fight, he knocked him down in three knockdowns, I believe. And then, he's been choking out a lot of people as well. Perez, very high success rate in terms of finishes. I think it's going to be a very competitive fight, and I'm leaning towards a finish. I don't think this is going to decision. I really don't think it is.
Well, it's because I feel like Dana's kind of cashing all a fair bit of his chips on Alex Perez, you know.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so as well because everyone was sort of cashing their chips in on Sean O'Malley. He was called the darling of Dana White's Contender Series.
Yeah, yeah.
So I feel like Dana maybe kind of wants to prove that, you know, he can actually find good fighters on him on his show. Because with Figueroa, I mean, Dana was a little disappointed in him the first time he fought Benavidez because he didn't make weight. So then they had to do the rematch. And then obviously, you know, he beat him again the second time. So I feel like, you know what, Perez, I've lost O'Malley. All chips are on you, buddy. So I feel like that's why they sort of pushing him, you know, because he's fourth in the flyweight division.
Yeah.
But again, rankings is...
Rankings don't matter at this rankings point. Rankings don't matter. It's interesting that Perez is now fighting for the championship instead of Cody Garbrandt, because that was a weird move as well.
Yeah.
For Cody to be dropping down to 125, because he looks quite big for 135. I was thinking, how is he going to make 125?
Yeah, well, not even that, but like he's only had one fight back since his last three losses in a row, you know, and to have one fight come back straight away and then all of a sudden get a shot at the title. I mean, don't get me wrong, Cody looked great in that last fight. He had a game plan, man, and he pulled a massive hook right off the cage. So, but to then drop a division which you haven't even competed in yet and fight for the title, I understand maybe, okay, yeah, drop a division, but give him the title shot straight away, I feel like that was a little bit, I feel that was a bit curious.
I feel like if you go up or down a division, if you're the champion, you can fight the if you are the champion, right? Yeah. However, because you're a former champion, I think you should fight someone in the top five and then work your way up. Yeah. Do I think you should be fighting, you know, I mean, there's not really scrubs in the UFC, but let's say like the lower ranked people, if you are a former champion in a division, probably not, right? But I do think you should fight the people in the top five. Don't get me wrong. If Cody won, you know, he's won his fight in bantamweight. If he moved down to flyweight, fought someone in the top five, looked impressive, he could argue for a title shot. Yeah. Like maybe he goes down, he fights Alex Perez or someone like that.
Yeah.
Then a title fight looks appealing, right? The Cody Garbrandt, Davison Figueroa fight looked, it just came out of nowhere and it wasn't expected. You know what I mean? It wasn't expected. There was no social media beef or anything like that for it to be cashed in as a money grab or a money fight. It was a weird thing that it would have made sense if he was a champion, a current champion, because then you can become a double champ or something across two weight divisions. I thought that was a bit weird.
Yeah. Well, since you just said if you're a champion, you can go up in weight division and fight the champion. Israel Adesanya versus Jan Błachowicz.
Yeah.
Who saw that coming? I did not see that coming. I remember the morning I woke up, I saw that on one of those MMA media outlets, and I sent this to you, and I was like, is this true?
I don't know if it's going to happen. The reason why I don't think it's going to happen is, all right, so Izzy versus Błachowicz is a great fight to watch. Yeah. Insane fight to watch. However, Błachowicz hasn't had a title defense yet, right?
Yeah.
However, neither have other fighters that have been champions and then double champions before. Now, against Błachowicz, that's an interesting fight to watch. However, Błachowicz cannot fight until after March. He's having a kid, right? Similar to Robert Whittaker, he didn't want to fight Izzy. He still has, in January, he's having a kid.
Yeah.
Fair enough, right? So obviously fighting is a very, well, you sacrifice a lot for fighting, things like that. You need to be there for your family in these important moments. So makes total sense, right? Glover Teixeira looked incredible. Oh,
unbelievable.
It was not last week, but the following week against Thiago Santos. Weathered a storm, choked out Santos. Now, he looked very, very impressive.
Especially for a man in his 40s.
I believe he's 41 or 42. Yeah. 41, I believe. Now, I believe he should fight Błachowicz, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Izzy should fight them, because Teixeira is not getting any younger.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. And he said that himself, right?
Was he ever champion at one point?
I don't believe so.
But he's fought for the title before.
Yes, he has fought for the title.
Yeah, he fought Jones for the title at one point. So, you know, give him a rematch for the title. Sorry, not give him a rematch against Jones, but give him another shot at the title It's last one. That could be, that's a fair play.
Yeah, and I think that Blachowicz versus Teixeira would be a good fight because, you know, if Izzy doesn't want to wait until after March, then, you know, they should make Blachowicz versus Teixeira before March because, you know, we've got November, December, January, February, and then we've got March. That's a long period of time to be out of the game, whereas Izzy tries to stay very, very active, doesn't want any rust or anything like that, which has helped a lot of fighters in the past. Now, Izzy doesn't need that time to bulk up. No. He walks around at light heavyweight. He walks around close to 205, right? He doesn't need to bulk up, although I haven't seen on social media, he's been working out with Carlos Ulberg, who just won on the Contender Series. He looks like a good prospect coming out of City Kickboxing. Interesting to watch his UFC debut in the future. He's huge, by the way. Fucking huge new Kiwi guy.
Is he a light heavyweight?
Believe he's a light heavyweight, yeah. Yep. Now, I believe Blachowicz should fight Teixeira if Izzy doesn't want to wait until March. You know?
He's a very active fighter. He's always ready to go.
He's a very active fighter. Interesting to see. I would like that. Otherwise, there's always someone, is it Kevin Holland who's fighting Jack Hermanson now that Darren Till is out of the fight due to a reoccurring knee injury? Similar knee injury to the one he had with Robert Whittaker.
Yes.
So Jack Hermanson is fighting, I believe it's Kevin Holland, I think.
Yes.
And that should be happening very soon. And that should be technically for the number one contender spot for the next title shot.
Wait, thing is though, Kevin Holland isn't even ranked.
He's not.
But Jack Hermanson's fourth.
Yeah, he's not ranked. He hasn't fought anyone ranked in the top 15. However, he's looked very impressive in his last fight, and there is a little bit of beef between him and Izzy.
Oh, what's the beef?
Something about, like, you know, they're just having a chat, like, why, you know, Izzy doesn't look that impressive, or he doesn't look that big, and then Izzy has gone, hey, are you talking about me? And that kind of normal stuff. They're alphas in their own minds,
sticking the dog, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Poking the dog.
One fight, well, UFC 255, you know, we've got the Perez versus Figueiredo, we've got the Valentina Shevchenko versus Jennifer Maia. That's an interesting fight to watch. Mike Perry, he'll be fighting soon as well.
For the elderweight title.
Yeah, so that's a cool fight to see. One I'm very keen for, because my family comes from Scotland. One I'm hoping to back is Paul Craig. He's having a rematch against Shogun Hua, and that's going to be UFC 255 next week. I'm very excited for that. Now, they fought in the past, and I believe that went to a draw. It'll be interesting to see how it goes this time now that Shogun, you know, he's an aged competitor now, and Paul Craig is, you know, he's on his way up. There's not many Scottish fighters in the UFC. You know, it's typically Americans, Brazilians. We're getting more Kiwis and Australians now. Hardly any Scottish people. So I'm happy to back Paul Craig in this next fight against Shogun, and I believe he does it. I believe he does it.
Well, we got to watch the card in general because even the prelims are stacked.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we got Brandon Rover fighting. We watched him fight last time against... In the Paulo Costa versus Israel Adesanya.
Kai Kara France.
Yeah. And
yes, he looked very good.
It was a very good fight to watch.
He's got a very scrappy kind of style. Yeah. But he's very... It sounds weird to say scrappy because it doesn't sound like he's technical. He is very technical.
Yeah.
But he's... It's that kind of relentless, like, pushing pressure that he has.
Yeah. Everyone's got eyes on the fight before that. Joaquin Buckley versus Jordan Wright.
Yes, yes.
Joaquin Buckley, he's in starting right now, so everyone's sort of got eyes on him, you know, and he's still in the prelims. I'm guessing people are going to be watching him. They're going to be like, oh, they're going to probably wait for him to just pull off something impressive. But the thing is, Joaquin Buckley, we don't want him to be a one-hit wonder.
No.
I want him to be, okay, he's had a moment. Let's keep the momentum going.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I feel like is the sort of situation with him. So, again, we got to watch that fight, man. And below that, we even have Antonina. Is that how you say it?
Antonina.
Antonina, sorry.
Antonina Shevchenko, Valentina's sister.
Yeah.
And she's fighting Ariane Lipsky. So that's an interesting fight as well. I mean, I'm not going to lie, UFC 255, when you encompass like the early prelims, the prelims, and the main card, it is quite a stacked card. I mean, it's not as impressive or the big names as the previous one with Khabib versus Gaethje, however, that is expected. But, I mean, we've just listed some incredible fights that we're super keen to see.
The value is still there.
The value is definitely there. I mean, yeah, I'm so excited.
Yeah. I feel like we should finish it up there because...
I think so too.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to be watching the fights on Sunday. Yes. So, hopefully, one thing we got to do is expect the unexpected. Yeah. So, be ready. I've got a serious feeling we're going to see some... killer knockouts.
I
honestly believe there's going to be some first round finishes.
I feel like I don't know about first round finishes, but I believe this is going to be
a knockout card.
The knockout card, yeah. Knockouts or just finishes in general, submissions as well. Yeah. I'm so keen for this.
All right, man. Let's finish it up there. All right, sweet. Thanks for watching, guys.
Peace, guys. Thank you.
Bye. Appreciate it. Bye bye.